Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, television broadcasting and indecency standards edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 10, 2012, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in FCC versus Fox. The question in this case is whether the Federal Communications Commission's standards for indecency are too vague to be constitutional. To discuss the case, we have Eric Jaffe, a Washington, D.C. attorney who specializes in appellate litigation, and Patrick Brennan, who is the Associate Dean of Academic Affairs and Professor at the Villanova University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now we have Mr. Jaffe to discuss the case from a libertarian perspective.
On January 10th, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in the case of FCC versus Fox and also FCC versus ABC, a case broadly raising the question of whether the FCC's broadcast indecency rules violate the First and Fifth Amendment. The First Amendment because it violates free speech, the Fifth Amendment because the rule would be deemed vague. The lower court found that the rule indeed was vague and struck it down, and the government petitioned for review in both instances, and the court agreed to hear it. The government's basic position in the matter is that by issuing broadcast licenses to sort of television stations that broadcast over the airways, they are entitled to impose obligations on those licenses, put conditions on those licenses which are valuable and free, and that some of those conditions can relate to the speech broadcast over the airways, including obscenity, indecency, and profanity. This case just involves indecency, and it turns on the scope and validity of a rule set down in 1978 by the Supreme Court in the Pacifica case, which said that it was okay for the FCC to restrict the use of the so-called seven dirty words, which was part of a routine by George Carlin, where he used all of the words that you supposedly were not allowed to use on broadcast. That case involved the radio, but the same rule generally applies to television as well. Overall, the FCC has sort of adopted a contextual rationale that certain words can sort of be a nuisance and be indecent in context, though in other contexts they wouldn't necessarily be indecent. So if you have nudity or cursing in a dramatic broadcast, say Saving Private Ryan or something like that, you'd get more leeway than if you were just a comic standing up uttering indecent words or a celebrity at an awards show who used even fleeting indecency and fleeting curse words. So the case actually involves two cases. In the Fox case, there was two instances of so-called fleeting expletive at the Billboard Music Awards in two different years, one instance by Cher using the F word and one instance by Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie having a brief conversation in which the F word and the S word were used. I guess from a libertarian perspective, talking about this case, we should use the actual words, fuck and shit. And so for anyone listening to this broadcast, I tell you it's indecent now, or you can probably figure that out on your own. But anyway, those were the words that got Fox in trouble and triggered that case, even though they were just brief and fleeting instances of it by commentators in a live award show. In the ABC case, that involved a 2003 broadcast of NYPD Blue, in which there was nudity, in particular 10 seconds or so showing a naked woman showing her rear end and showing the side of her breast. And NYPD Blue, over the years, had long had some instances of nudity, but this particular instance of nudity was deemed to be a little bit too salacious in the context of the show, and so they got sanctioned for that. The government's overall argument is that there was sufficient notice to both broadcasters that these kinds of things would likely run afoul of the rule, and that the government is entitled to impose conditions on this valuable license that it's handing out to broadcasters, sort of a condition on something valuable they're giving. And the respondent's argument, in the court below as well, is that those rules are vague. It's hard to know when you're going to violate the rules, what words will be a violation of when, in what instances, when will nudity be okay and when won't it, with lots of examples of instances where nudity has appeared in other contexts and been deemed okay, but somehow it's not okay in this context. And one of the private respondents also seeks to overrule or at least significantly narrow the Pacifica ruling that permitted FCC's indecency rules way back when, and has pointed out that sort of technology has overwhelmed that ruling given the expansion of cable and the internet and satellite TV, the availability of the V-chip and things of that sort, and that there's no justification any longer for having different rules for different types of broadcasters, cable versus regular broadcast TV, for example. During the argument, Justice Sotomayor didn't participate. She was recused, and Justice Thomas was his traditionally silent self, so there wasn't anything from either of those, though Thomas, in an earlier opinion regarding this case, had suggested that Pacific is outdated and probably should be overruled. So one can infer his view of this is going to be favorable to the First Amendment and somewhat hostile to the government. But as for the other seven, there were sort of three that were distinctly pro-government. Scalia, Roberts, and Alito all seemed to be particularly skeptical of the private party's arguments. Scalia taking the strongest position, sort of anti-vulgarity position, that it's perfectly fine to establish a safe haven in broadcast regardless of what's happening in other media, and that would go a long way towards setting a symbolic value for reducing vulgarity in public at large. I think Scalia's vote thus is pretty predictable in this instance. Justice Roberts and Justice Alito also seemed rather skeptical of the private parties. Justice Roberts sort of seemed to think that the scope of this rule was fairly small, that context was okay, that the other outlets for expression, such as cables, satellite, and the internet, gave people ample room to curse and show nudity if they wanted to, so why do you need to let them do it here? It was an odd First Amendment position that you have plenty of other means of speech, so we can take away your speech here, but it is what it is. Justice Alito similarly seemed skeptical, particularly skeptical of overruling Pacifica, showing concern that it might have sort of worse effects in the radio context than in the television context, and also showing concern that as broadcast reduces its role as a deliverer of media and that other forms of media become more prominent, this becomes less and less of a problem under the First Amendment. It's ironic in that it also becomes less and less of a problem generally, and then it becomes very difficult to distinguish between broadcast and cable, but Alito thought that cut in favor of leaving the rule alone and letting it die a natural death. Against those three were sort of Justice Kagan and Justice Ginsburg, both of whom seemed rather skeptical of the government's approach, thinking that it was rather vague and that it was hard for folks to know when it would be okay and when it wouldn't be okay to use vulgarity or to show some nudity. Justice Ginsburg in particular kept giving examples of sort of instances of how would you ever know if this opera or that movie were okay or not okay and how can you predict. Justice Kagan was similarly skeptical on vagueness grounds, though at one point seemed to be suggesting a middle ground that you could sort of limit your ruling to what went on in some instances or not overrule Pacifica entirely, though the overall impression she left was of a greater skepticism, but perhaps not going so far as to fully overrule Pacifica. So that leaves Justice Kennedy and Justice Breyer. Turning to Justice Breyer first, he seemed skeptical of the respondents, and in particular seemed to be looking for a way to make the case go away or to minimize it. So he kept asking whether or not it was properly before the court, based on, I think, some confusion about the record, which the government, I think, correctly stated that there was no, that the case was indeed properly before the court and couldn't just be dismissed on those grounds. And then Justice Breyer also sort of suggested that one could have a very narrow as-applied ruling, reflecting, I think, his usual tendency to want to rule on a case-by-case basis and make each decision himself rather than lay out broad rules. So suggesting that he could, you know, they could limit the ruling to just the fleeting expletive policy and say that fleeting expletives are unpredictable, and so maybe you can't restrict those, but you could certainly restrict more conscious and repeated use of expletives. And likewise suggesting that maybe they just review the NYPD Blue episode and decide that it was applying the policy to that was too much. It was an odd approach, but I think at the end of the day, much of it was designed to avoid overruling Pacifica, and thus he probably falls into the sort of pro-government camp at the end of the day, possibly joining on to an extremely narrow ruling that struck down some things, but left the bulk of the FCC policy intact. That leaves Justice Kennedy, who, of course, is usually a decisive vote on these things. In this eight-justice situation, 4-4 would leave the policy, would leave the underlying ruling intact, so which way he goes matters quite a bit. And he was unclear. He seemed to suggest at one point that there was indeed a symbolic value to a vulgarity-free zone, a suggestion that Justice Scalia picked up, but at other points also seemed skeptical of why there would be a difference between cable and broadcast, and skeptical of the need for this rule in light of the V-chip and other things of that sort. So he's harder to predict, though I imagine he also might go along with a narrow ruling against the FCC, but that still left some degree of discretion intact. But that remains to be seen. So just on a rough ballpark of the oral argument, strikes me that there's three favor of the government, two likely against the government, but and another person who, two other people who might take middle grounds. And so we might see something where the government loses, but loses small rather than losing big, and the likelihood of Pacifica going away doesn't seem very high. So that then brings us to sort of the substance of this whole case and sort of my views on the substance of this case. It always has struck me that the indecency policy for broadcast TV, if it ever made sense, rapidly stopped making sense with the advent of other technology. Once upon a time, it was based upon this being the only means of transmitting entertainment. Now that we have cable and internet and satellites, those parts of the argument go away, and the justification for distinguishing between those areas and this area are pretty weak. Scalia's sort of approach, which is symbolic place where vulgarity is forbidden, is an unusually bad First Amendment argument. For whatever it may be in terms of public policy, as a First Amendment argument, it strikes me as fairly terrible. The symbolic merit of having one tiny segment of the market where the government can force you not to be vulgar hardly counts as a compelling or even an important government interest, particularly where it's sort of its efficacy in terms of avoiding vulgarity in the media in general is well nigh zero in light of cable, in light of broadcast, satellite, and certainly in light of the internet, which they have pretty consistently seemed to think that you can't regulate. So I just don't quite get it, other than sort of the overall moralistic approach of we get the same morals and regulate accordingly, but that doesn't seem to jive very well with the First Amendment. Justice Roberts and Justice Alito's view on this, similarly, that it's a small problem, so we can ignore the First Amendment given that it's not a big deal, likewise struck me as a little odd. Those are hardly meaningful First Amendment arguments, and there seemed to be very little attempt to get the government to actually justify its behavior on traditional First Amendment standards. So if that's what the legacy of Pacifica is, that we just get to blink the First Amendment away and ignore it, that's a little disturbing. The deeper underlying issue going on here, I suspect, is the notion that since the licenses are given by the government has the right to control them to some degree, I guess in a sense that it's thinking that it's the government's property. But of course, you wouldn't ever say something like that about a public park, which is government property, and you might say something like that about a limited public forum, but broadcast is hardly analogous to that anymore, particularly given that it's largely indistinguishable from cable. Most people get their broadcast via cable in any event, and as you're going through the channels, the differences are almost non-existent. Those kinds of arguments that the government can regulate because it's granting you some privilege have long been rejected in other contexts. The rights-privilege distinction that says a privilege to do X so that we can regulate your speech if we let you do X has been rejected in the context of gambling, has been rejected in lots of other contexts, and in any event, I think, overstates the nature of the privilege here. If the government has chosen to give these things away for free, that doesn't suddenly exempt them from the Constitution, and they can certainly auction them for money if they think they have some valuable assets. But at the end of the day, broadcast is very much like a public marketplace. There are lots of ideas going back and forth. We would never imagine, for example, that the government could regulate political speech in that context or could regulate the news in that context. And so the notion that it's only entertainment, so we don't care, is a disturbing First Amendment precedent to set that these other forms of speech, many of which are not merely entertainment, but also have meaningful statements as well, and the meaningful political or social statements in them as well, strikes me as a bad precedent to set. Now, I don't think anybody's going to go into the deep theory on the First Amendment when making this issue. They're just going to say, Pacifica's out there, we're not going to think too hard about why, thank you very much, and it's nice to have a place where you don't hear curses. But that's really not a terribly rigorous way of approaching the First Amendment. Overall, if we're worried about vulgarity in society and, you know, making a prettier, less offensive society, it strikes me that it's social norms that should drive that, and things like advertising, and in fact, those kinds of things are already driving much of this. There are plenty of channels dedicated entirely to kids where you're not going to ever hear vulgarity of that sort. You're not going to see nudity, and those channels are a response to market pressures, and that's exactly the way we'd want the marketplace of ideas to work, and then people can pick and choose what channels they watch just as easily. If this is somehow the government sitting in the role of sort of parents patria in place of the parents themselves, so that the poor kids might turn onto a channel by mistake, that's, once again, in the speech context, not a rule that I think is terribly persuasive for the government to argue. We seen that rejected in other contexts, most recently in the context of violent video games. So to apply that here seems to be a little bit of a stretch. Anyway, that's my overall take on the case and on the argument. I suspect the government will either win outright or lose in a very narrow way that leaves much of its policy intact. I suspect we will not see any meaningful discussion of the theory of the First Amendment as it relates to indecency in broadcast, except perhaps by Justice Thomas. I imagine most of the other justices will just bypass that and talk about why they're not going to overrule Pacifica, and that's a big step, and they don't need to take it to resolve the case here, either in the government's favor or on very narrow grounds against the government. Thank you very much.
And now we have Professor Brennan to discuss the case from a socially conservative perspective.
Mr. Jaffe has done a good job summarizing the background to Fox versus FCC in the Supreme Court for the second time, and I don't really have anything to add to that or to contradict in what he said. He's also done a fine job, I think, of interpreting the oral argument and of predicting, as best one can, the outcome in a case in which the court is really all over the map. I've been asked to address the issues in the case from the socially conservative, as it's commonly called, point of view, and I'm happy to do that. Justice Scalia couldn't be clearer that he reads the First Amendment as allowing the FCC to regulate indecency under the context-based approach at issue in these cases. According to Justice Scalia, it is the proper role of our government to regulate broadcast media so as to create, quote, a safe haven, close quote, where viewers can go and not worry that indecency is going to be sprung on them at any moment. And Justice Scalia notes that there's a symbolic value, as he calls it, in governments taking a stand against indecency by the way it regulates the privilege of using the airwave. Now, I think Justice Scalia is undeniably right that there is a huge symbolic value in this regulation, which, of course, is part of what fuels the other side, not just the respondent television stations, but the dozens of amici who want the court to apply strict scrutiny to regulation of the broadcast media. Justice Kennedy, who, as Mr. Jaffe pointed out, seems likely to provide the deciding vote in the case, picked up on this point about the, quote, public value, as he called it, of having a particular segment of the media with different standards than other segments of the media. But he went on to ask about the symbolic value of aspiring to a culture that's not vulgar, only in a comparatively small slice of the media culture. Nonetheless, Justice Scalia was happy to pick up on Justice Kennedy's questioning about symbolic value, and here's what Justice Scalia said. Sign me up as supporting Justice Kennedy's notion that this has a symbolic value. Just as we require a certain modicum of dress for the people that attend this court and the people that attend other federal courts. It's a symbolic matter, he continued, and if these are public airwaves, the government is entitled to insist upon a certain modicum of decency, close quote. Now, I'm not sure that Justice Scalia wasn't overly eager to sign up with Justice Kennedy, because I'm not sure that Justice Kennedy can, in fact, be relied on to deliver the necessary vote, because, as is well known, Justice Kennedy is typically a libertarian about free speech, but we can hope. Chief Justice Roberts' position emerged fairly clearly in the argument. Respondents had argued that Pacifica should be overruled because in the more than 30 years since it was decided, cable has become equally as pervasive as broadcast media, thereby undermining Pacifica's pervasiveness rationale. But Chief Justice Roberts counted that, quote, cuts both ways. He continued, people who want to watch broadcasts where these words are used or expose their children to broadcast where these words are used, there are 800 channels where they can go for that. All we are asking for, and then the Chief Justice corrected himself, what the government is asking for is a few channels where you can say, I'm not going to. They are not going to hear the S word, the F word. They're not going to see nudity. So the proliferation of media, it seems to me, cuts against you. Close quote from Chief Justice Roberts. Next, Justice Alito asked why the petitioners were asking the court to overrule Pacifica and suggested that it should just be left to, quote, die a natural death, close quote. Justice Kennedy repeatedly made the point that if the court did what petitioners asked, there would inevitably be more bad language and nudity on broadcast stations. And when counsel for Fox countered that the broadcast media would try to control the indecency to some extent, of course, as controlled by market conditions, Chief Justice Roberts observed that, quote, "The idea that the problem is going to go away because you are going to be as good as you can seems an odd way to analyze the First Amendment," close quote. Responding to ABC's argument, following that of the Second Circuit, that a context-based system of regulation is unconstitutionally vague, Chief Justice Roberts then observed, quote, "that people understand that context matters. People, including children, know the difference between hearing a bad word when someone hits their thumb with a hammer and when they hear it in normal conversation. By not regulating based on an exhaustive list of bad words, as it did until 2001, the FCC was actually increasing freedom of speech, as petitioners and amici argued in their briefs. And as the government argued, a context-based approach was necessary to address the race to the bottom that started in the 1980s with shock jock phenomenon, which avoided the seven forbidden words but was truly raunchy. Now, taking a step back, if the court wants to decide the case on a narrow ground and avoid overruling Pacifica, as a lot of the arguments suggested it does, it can overrule the Second Circuit on the ground that the Court of Appeals asked the wrong question. The Second Circuit invalidated the FCC's entire indecency policy based on the policy's application to broadcasts that simply weren't before the court. But as the Supreme Court made clear just 2 years ago in Holder against Humanitarian Law Project, even in adjudicating First Amendment challenges, courts must, quote, "consider whether a statute is vague as applied to the particular facts at issue. Plaintiff who engages in conduct that is clearly proscribed cannot complain of the vagueness of the law as applied to others," close quote. Any as-applied challenge here should fail. Fox could not reasonably have believed that the conceitedly gratuitous broadcast of the F word and the S word would not be considered indecent. Those words, which appeared in the Carlin monologue, have long been the focus of the FCC indecency regulation. And moving to the other case, for ABC to claim surprise is even more outlandish. The broadcast in question was called Nude Awakening. And if you've seen the segment in question, there's no doubt why, as the Solicitor General said in oral argument, the FCC considered it voyeuristic. You've got to give Seth Waxman credit for trying, though, when he explained to the court that, quote, "this was an exploration of one of the things that happens when a little boy stumbles in and watches a woman in the quotidian activity of preparing her morning shower," close quote from Waxman. The FCC in 1960 had specifically warned broadcasters that the televising of nudes might well raise a serious question of unlawful indecency. Fox and FCC are sophisticated entities. They have the services of compliance personnel. And it's nearly impossible to believe that Fox and ABC weren't on notice that the F and S words and voyeuristic nudity didn't violate, as Pacifica requires, quote, "contemporary community standards for the broadcast medium," close quote. So in reply to Waxman's argument, I would just say calling voyeurism a quotidian act does not make it decent. So to wrap this up, the brief by the American Academy of Pediatrics, mentioned by the Solicitor General, makes the point, in arguing that Pacifica should not be overruled, that a substantial number of Americans, and now I'm quoting from that amicus brief, a substantial number of Americans depend on over-the-air broadcasting. A recent study found that 46 million out of 110 million households relied on over-the-air television broadcasting as their primary means of receiving television programming, up from 42 million households a year earlier. Another recent study, continuing to quote from the amicus brief, found that low-income households with children are particularly dependent on broadcast television. It found that while 98% of children under age 8 in households with incomes of $30,000 or less have a television, only 53% have cable, and only 48% have a computer. Thus, the brief continues, broadcast television remains a pervasive and important part of American society that is uniquely accessible to young children. Accordingly, Pacifica provides a viable and important basis for the FCC to protect children from daytime broadcasts of repetitive, excretory, and sexual references. Close quote. Now, it's a familiar libertarian trope, the claim that social conservatives use children, one might even say abuse children, as a sort of end run around the First Amendment. But it's undeniable that a society that does not protect its children, above all, is really digging its own collective grave. There are very few places where our government can actually do something to reduce the explosion of indecency, but this is actually one of them. What the Pacifica Court said in 1978 remains valid today. Now, I quote from a case quoting Pacifica. Pacifica's broadcast could have enlarged a child's vocabulary in an instant. Other forms of offensive expression may be withheld from the young without restricting the expression at its source. Bookstores and motion picture theaters, for example, may be prohibited from making indecent material available to children. We held in the Ginsburg case that the government's interest in the well-being of its youth and its supporting parents' claims to authority in their household justified the regulation of otherwise protected expression. The ease with which children may obtain access to broadcast material, coupled with the concerns recognized in Ginsburg, amply justify special treatment of indecent broadcasting. I think the rationale of Pacifica for giving special protection to children counsels in favor of not overruling that case, but reversing the Second Circuit's judgment in order to let the FCC continue to provide safe haven with all of the symbolic benefit that means for our culture. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.